Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, baby.
Hello, hello, my love.
Ready for another episode?
Yeah, let's make another episode.
A late episode. Sincere apologies to all of our beautiful, lovely listeners out there. We did not drop an episode yesterday when we typically do. Had to take a little like day to just not do much. It's been a bit of a rough couple of days over here at Casa Saunders.
I don't know how I knew you were going to say that.
Casa Saunders?
Yeah.
Cool.
It's not like something that comes out of your mouth very frequently.
I don't think I've ever said that in my life.
I was thinking it in my head miles before it even came out of your mouth.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have to get like too into it, but I guess kind of relevant to the show. Experiencing some heartbreak, mm-hmm. Going through a bit of a breakup, I think. Mm-hmm. And man, fuck! I just like it is. It is pain that is so visceral. Mm-hmm. Heartbreak, you know, like I don't know if we talked about it on the show. No, I think I read you an email. Someone wrote into Sick Boy the other day about like talking about grief and talking about Bigby and losing their dog. Mm. And it was just making me when I read that email, and this was like a week ago, I was kind of brought back to the day that we put Bigby down. Mm. And how that pain was so physical, mm-hmm. like the loss of your best friend. You know, I'm no stranger to like physical pain.
Yeah.
Like that's my everyday life. But emotionally, physical pain,
yeah,
or emotional pain that manifests as physical.
Mm-hmm.
God damn. It's as fucking intense as, you know, that day we lost Bigby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kind of pain that, like, you want to run from. Oof. It's so overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know my instinct when I feel that way is just to curl up in a ball, like get as small as I can.
Yeah.
And that's a very, I think, evolutionary mode of protection, to curl forward, to curl up, to, like, you know, protect your internal organs. Survival. It's wild how it all comes down to survival, don't you think? Like, this pain that you feel, there's some message in it that is like, I'm going to die. That's how your body responds to it, is like something is attacking.
Mm. Yeah. I've been listening to a lot of Duncan Trussell over the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's a very philosophical guy. He had this guy, one of his best friends, Emil Amos. Anyway, they were just talking about philosophy the entire time. And one of the things they were saying was, like, they were talking about dukkha. We were talking about this last night. They were talking about suffering and, like, this notion in Buddhism, which is that life is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That is what life is. It's just suffering. and I'm trying really hard to, like, view this as a positive, you know, like the suffering that this is. It's like, okay, yeah, this is, as much as this sucks, this is what it feels like to be alive. This is what living is. And there's something, I don't know, maybe there's something beautiful in that. But fuck, dude. Breakups suck.
I was listening. I've been listening to some philosophy as well, and was listening to a new podcast that I'm kind of really into called For the Wild. And it's a really smart lady, and she talks to a bunch of really smart people and on all kinds of subjects that are probably considered to be fairly heavy and fairly dark, but, like, really practical. Ooh. about the world that we're living in. Mm. And what you just said reminded me of one of her guests. She had on, he was talking about, I think the subject of that podcast was called, like, capitalism and the erosion of morality.
Mm.
And, anyway, he was just talking about how it's wild that, you know, that it's medieval is the word he uses. It's medieval that we live in a system where a couple of people hold all the wealth and power, and there are people starving or people that don't have homes, and that people who have to, like, steal to get by or to provide for their families, it's like they're not criminals, but because survival is heroic, is what he said. It's just to survive at all is heroic. And that's what I've been thinking about lately in terms of, yeah, this existence and and everything we combat.
Yeah.
And so much of it is, so much of it is suffering. And that the mercy that we're afforded at all in this life full of suffering are the moments of beauty that we can find in it.
Yeah.
And yeah, you just, like, have to find it in whatever you can. And if you can find that in your own pain and what you're learning from it, that seems like, not to put it in capitalist terms and say, like, it's the most productive thing to do with your pain is, like, see its utility and usefulness in your life. But
yeah. But yeah, I don't know if I'm doing that. I think I'm trying. I don't know how much I'm succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm curious to know your thoughts on this. And like, and actually, I'll put this out to the listeners too, because I'm sure everyone's experienced heartbreak. And like, I Googled like the day before yesterday. I was like, how to
heal a broken heart.
Yeah. Like, yeah. How to handle a breakup or something like mm-hmm. that. Like, how does one do this? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this is like this is the second time I've gone through something similar to this in the last, like, I guess, year and a half. And I didn't actually digest anything that I read. I think I was just reading it going, fuck all this. Like, I'm not even in the mood. But what are your thoughts on like distraction? You know, like, is that valuable? Cause like the moment it happened, I immediately was like, okay, I can't sit in this feeling right now. Like, I gotta play some video games. Like, I just like fucking, and I played video games for like 6 hours straight. And then when I was done, I was exhausted. I was like, okay, now I can just go to sleep. And then I slept. And then I woke up the next morning and was like, now I'll just work. I'll work. And I just spent the whole day like fucking working. And then done working, I was like, I'm going to play more video games. And like,
yeah.
And I don't know how valuable that is. Like, I don't know if that's the way to do it. Because there's something that I feel like that's probably not the most healthy way to...
Yeah.
To handle it. But I don't know what else to do. Thank fuck I'm getting a dog in fucking 8 days, man. Holy shit. Like, I think I'm just holding off. I'm holding out for that moment. Like, when I get when I get this new sweet little puppy, when Donut mm-hmm. comes, I'm just going to be like, I'll be falling in love all over again. I'll be, you know, mm-hmm. I'll be building new love with this little potato, but but that's 8 days away.
Yeah,
it's a long time.
You know what? I think that with heartbreak, I mean, you know, we talked about this in our conversation with Kat Nance as well. It's like there is a certain amount, there is a capacity, I think, of the nervous system to be able to handle a lot or all of it at once, ongoing, continuously. I think Kat said something about how, like basically not remaining in this state all the time. You can't, of just like raw feeling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you think about something really, really traumatic happening and the body going into shock, that's kind of I feel like when you distract yourself from potential rumination that has no use or it doesn't make things better, then that's actually kind of like, I think it can be pretty healthy. I think it could be kind of like taking a painkiller, but you have to monitor that for yourself so that the feelings that you're having don't come out in an inappropriate way at an inappropriate time and in something that's just, you know, could have been sat with a little bit before. But before we move on from pain and suffering, I have been half listening to this podcast called This Union Life. And it's a psychology based podcast. It's hosted by three scholars. And their voices are so like soothing to fall asleep to. But anyway, I woke up today and episode 170 had been released and it was called Letting Go, When Is It Time? And that is like, that is letting go, not even just like a relationship, but I feel like this is something I've been asked to figure out so many times. It's like, can I keep going in this direction, or is it time to let go of that dream?
Right. Yeah.
With different things. And in this discussion, they've been using the sort of the metaphor. Well, he'll bring it up and I'm going to play it so everybody can hear it. And if I need to add, I've been immersed in it kind of all day. So if I need to give it context after I play it, then I will.
Okay.
Does that work for you?
Yeah. Yeah. Go for it.
Okay. So if I just hold up to my microphone like here, it should work.
Should. Let's see what happens.
Okay. Let me make sure my volume's all the way up. Okay.
Or do I let go?
Okay. Here.
So pain and suffering is the heat that begins to dissolve the glue that sticks us to the old situation.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Without that, it's unlikely that many of us would probably let go of something which is we're ambivalent about, but is adequate. We need enough pain. I've often been very impressed by people who let go of something and shift to something better just based on some kind of rational analysis. They just are kind of open to a new experience and they just turn to the right and take the next step. But I think for most of us that actually get attached to things, we have to go through a process to let go.
That is such a great metaphor, Joseph. And I think we're in the realm of depression. I think depression is that suffering that melts the glue that's been keeping us stuck to something. And in fact, I remember reading many years ago that some evolutionary biologists had posited that depression has a positive function, and that is to force the person to relinquish a strategy that isn't working. So it's that suffering that occurs when there's some distance between the thing we want and our ability to make it happen.
Anyway, that's kind of, and I was thinking about, so they use the analogy of clinging to a rock in the river.
Yeah.
You know, and the difference between clinging and letting go and the actual like process of softening your grip as being incredibly painful. And an incredibly necessary part.
Whoa, trippy. Yeah.
The fuck, surrender.
Man. You know, that's really funny that you said that. I had that not a metaphor. I had that exact experience once in life. And it was one of the scariest moments of my life. I was in, I was paddling this river in Mexico, called the Rio Grande. And it was like a three day long expedition of quite technical and quite intense rapids, like class 3-4 rapids. And this one particular day, we had done it in kayaks before, but we took two rafts, and we were going down, and we were at the very, like, I don't know, the first hour or two. We hit this like crazy fucking feature, this crazy rapid. And I got kicked from the raft. I was the only one that fell out. And, you know, you have a life jacket on, and we were trained on how to maneuver and swim within a rapid, how to like find eddies, which are little pockets of river that are behind rocks or things like that, that are flowing in the opposite direction. So like little calm pools that exist within this really crazy series of rapids. So if you're in an eddy, yeah, you're good. You're safe. Like you want to find your way to an eddy. And I got kicked in the middle of this really intense rapid. And there was a huge rock just off to the left of the on the river. It wasn't at the bank. It was still in the middle of the river, but it was just slightly to the left and then middle. And I remember when I fell out, I got out of the water, was trying to catch my breath, took in a bit of water through my nose or whatever. It's very loud. The raft is now ahead of me. It's downriver. And so what was supposed to happen was the raft needs to find an eddy, a little pool of calm, to stop so that I can link up with it and meet it. But because it's so far down the river, I need to find little pockets of eddies to kind of like navigate my way to it without just being overwhelmed and swallowed up by these crazy rapids. And so this rock that was to the left, I was like, well, there's a big fucking rock. That's a big, big bitch of a rock. And I'll try to get into the eddy behind it, because not inevitably, chances are very high that there is one behind it. And I mistimed. And what happened was the rapid is coming down and pushing up against that rock. And I didn't time it correctly. And I actually got the rapid sort of glued me to the face of that rock. And so now my face is against the rock. All I can see is rock. And the river is with such force is pushing behind me, and I can't get off the rock. And if I was facing the other way, if my back was to the rock, I would have drowned, because I would have just like the river would have just, but what was happening was the water was flowing up and over my head and hitting this rock. And so there was this little pocket the size of my fist in front of my face where there was just air. Mm-hmm. And I remember holding this fucking rock and and panicking, because I was like, oh my God, this is not good. This is not a good place to be. I could drown here. And the raft was just a little bit downriver from where I was, and they had found an eddy, and they were holding steady there. And one of the people that we were doing this expedition with, I could hear him. And he was trying to scream, like yell as loud as he could over the sound of the very loud river. He was trying to get his voice to puncture through the fucking sound that is like berating my head of river going, like flooding my face and my head. And he was screaming to let go of the rock. And I was so afraid to let go, because in that moment, all I could focus on was like, I can breathe right now. Mm-hmm. If I let go, I might not be able to breathe, depending on which way I go. And I need, like, I do not want to let go of this thing. And he kept yelling, like, you got to let go. You got to let go. Oh my God. Even just talking about it right now.
Yeah. I've never heard this.
It's making me emotional. Fuck. It was so scary. It was so fucking scary. And I, and yeah, I just had this moment where I was like, okay, I can't stay here.
Yeah.
This is not a life to live. Mashed up against a rock.
This is where I live now.
Yeah. And so I let go. And but I was so scared that my fight or flight was like peaking. Mm-hmm. And it's fight, flight, or freeze. So I wasn't fighting, and I wasn't fleeing. I was totally frozen. And so when I let go, I froze. It was the first time in my entire life that I ever had that experience where I was like in shock. And I let go, and I was this rag doll and the river took me like very violently and quickly, took me around this rock, and I started going down. Now, what was happening now, though, was I was going down the river, getting closer and closer to the raft, closer and closer to the raft, and I could see everybody in the raft looking at me. And I was so frozen. What I should have been doing was swimming in the direction, so like towards shore, in the direction of the eddy. Because if you don't catch that eddy, it's just going to keep you going. Yeah. But I was frozen, and and the guy that was yelling, he started yelling, you got to swim. and I wasn't swimming. I was just like, I was just this fucking lifeless body with a life jacket just floating and frozen. And he was like, you got to swim, you got to swim. And then everybody in the raft started screaming, swim, swim, swim. And so I started swimming. Something kicked in. I started fucking swimming, but like total panic. And then I caught the eddy right at the very edge of it. And at this point, I'm now behind the raft, but I caught that same eddy that they were in. And they picked me up and I got in the raft. And what was so fucking fucked about that situation was I got in the raft and everyone could see that I was really shook. Like I was shook up. And there was no time to, we couldn't stop. You know, we have another like 3 hours of paddling to get to the destination that we need to get for our camp so that we can continue the next day and then the next day to finish this entire trip. And I remember just sitting in the boat being like, I don't know if I can do it. Like, I don't know if I can contribute. And so the raft is six people paddling and one person who's guiding. And we would switch off who guides. And the guide's the one that sits at the back and basically is like steering and instructing everybody else what to do. And I was one of the paddlers. I obviously wasn't guiding at this moment. And I just, he was like, you just stay there. You just hang tight. And when you're ready, pick up your paddle and we'll start going again. And so I just sat in that raft for like, it must have been 10 minutes of just like trying to come back to reality. And then 10 minutes later, I was like, all right, well, you gotta continue. Like you can't be like this forever. You gotta pick up your paddle and fucking put it in the water and start to contribute here because you're just dead weight. And then that was it. It was like, light switch went off and it was like, oh yeah, I'm good. I didn't die. So I'm good. Like I can do this. And that was it. It was like 30 minutes from there. It was like, it never happened. I remember when we finished that 3-day expedition, looking back at it, I was like, whoa, fuck. That was really fucked up. Like that was a really scary experience. And then when that was a 3-month long trip, 21 different rivers. We were paddling every single day. I remember at the end of that trip, looking back at like, you know, 2 or 3 months out when the trip was over, it was like 2 or 3 months ago that we finished. And I remember looking back going, what the fuck was I doing?
What the fuck were you doing?
What was I like? I almost died like 3 times on that trip. Like it was fucking insane. And it was this, you know. But when you're in it, you're in it, and you have to be in it, and you have to do the best that you can. And anyway, I don't know what this is a metaphor for, but I don't even fucking know how I got there. You said something that reminded me of clinging onto rocks, and I was like, oh yeah, I did that for real once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then letting go is this like, there's no assurance. This is what they go on to say on this podcast too, is like, there's no assurance that you're going to be fine. There's no assurance that the place you're going is going to be better than the one that you're at.
No.
And I don't know what the metaphor necessarily for that whole, there's so much in there, but I was really moved by the image of everybody on the raft coaching you to swim.
Yeah.
And it just really, it just made me feel a bit of a swell of love for community, because I think that I'm hoping that the future that we're moving into has more of that. I've never been super politically minded or known much about philosophy and history of politics, but I've been thinking about it a lot more lately, reading a lot more about like socialism and the idea of mutual aid. And it was funny, I was reading I was kind of reading about the, I was thinking about all the paperwork involved with being married and like the business
of
being married. And so I looked up, I kind of Googled it, I think the business of marriage. And I found this really neat essay by a writer in Toronto. And I think it's just called The Business of Marriage. And her name is Linda Bessner. And I was just kind of curious about it. I dove in. It turned out to be a very large read and all about economics and basically sharing your finances as a married person. Mm. But then also breaking down some of the sort of the thoughts of some of the big thinkers in terms of economics and examining their relationships. And she wrote something. She mentioned mutual aid, and I'll just read you the quote from that. I've been thinking about it in context of our marriage, and like, you know, we're about to celebrate our 10th year of marriage. And anyway, so I'm just going to read this quote. It said, "Historically, marriage was an outward-facing arrangement that wove otherwise unrelated groups into mutual aid networks." And when I think about our marriage and, you know, what we knew before we got married versus like what we know now, and how we chose to hold our wedding, which was just like, everyone's invited and whoever can come can come. And that idea of like calling people together to basically say like, we're invested in your relationship. Some people give money or they fly from different parts of the country. We've invested in your partnership. And they have, like, financially. But this idea of those networks that you make when one family marries into another family is that there will be people there to remind you to swim. And like, you've basically increased your network of people who are there to support you, not only in your relationship, but also in your personal level of happiness and contentment. And, you know, we see examples of mutual aid, in Halifax with those shelters that have been erected for the homeless people that have caused all kinds of controversy in town. We see it in how other countries and other places and different organizations and community groups have sprung to action to serve people during COVID-19. And just I just picked up on that, on the raft thing, and thinking about how important, like how we, most of us probably wouldn't have survived without some kind of community aid. But our relationships become so insular and so private and so isolated, our marriages, you know, that it doesn't embody that anymore. It doesn't sort of hold that weight and responsibility and security, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me think about like resiliency and how no matter how resilient we may think we are, like we need other people around us to lift us up. We need other people. Like our community is what makes us resilient. You know, it's like there's no individual who's just resilient. We're dependent on others to help us have that strength or that power to be able to like spring back, you know?
Very, very, very profound and interesting.
Yeah. Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You want to move into some lighter, more silly stuff?
Yeah, let's get silly.
All right. A friend of mine sent me a message the other day, this Vice article, all about AI pickup lines. I feel like we may have talked about this on the show before, or maybe I read it. I read it before, off air and thought about it to be on the podcast. But if we've already covered this before, I'm sorry, but I don't think we have.
I don't think we have.
Let me read you this article. It's very, I thought it to be very entertaining. So AI, artificial intelligence, is finally learning to flirt. This is something that I could probably use some help with. I think I need some AI flirt education. While romantic banter continues to elude the likes of Siri, Alexa, I don't want to say it too loud because she's here, and Google Assistant, an advanced AI system out of the United States is being trained to seduce, churning out original pickup lines for the express purpose of scoring a date. This woman, Janelle Shane, is a research scientist and author from Colorado. She created a squad of courtship bots using one of the most sophisticated text writing AI algorithms in the world, a language model known as the Generative Pre-trained Transformer 3, which stands for, which is GPT-3. We've talked about GPT-3 on Sick Boy a fucking ton. It's super fast.
GPT-3? I gotta write that down. GPT-3.
GPT-3. Okay. It's super fascinating. Brian somehow has access to GPT-3 through his work outside of the podcast. And we actually use GPT-3 to, we input a bunch of information about Sick Boy podcast and had it generate taglines for the show.
Whoa.
And one of the taglines was like, Sick Boy podcast, we'll meet you in the hospital or something, or like something like that. And I was like, that's actually not bad. So GPT-3 uses deep learning to produce human-like text. And researchers claim GPT-3's output is so advanced that it is often difficult to distinguish it from material written by a real flesh and blood human, which in this case says some troubling things about the standards we've come to expect from a real flesh and blood human. Quote, I'm losing my voice from all the screaming your hotness is causing me to do, reads one pickup line, which could be too easily sure. Have been lifted from a Tinder DM screenshot. Another one, quote, I will briefly summarize the plot of Back to the Future 2 for you, reads another.
Oh.
To extract such titillating repartees, Shane fed an article template into four different variants of GPT-3 and prompted each to fill in its prediction of what the rest of the article might be. The article was titled, These are the top pickup lines of 2021. Amaze your crush and get results. So it took this article that was like, here are the top pickup lines, gave it to this robot, GPT-3, and the robot, the AI, goes, okay, thank you for this information. I will now give you the pickup lines that I think would be better because I'm an AI robot and this is what I've been trained to do, okay?
I can't wait. This is the future of
yeah. So each of the robots had a name. Each of the AI bots had a name. Da Vinci, which Shane describes as on her blog as the largest and most competent of the four AIs, by far the most intelligible of the bunch. Da Vinci pickup lines vacillated between charming quips, chilling propositions, and cryptic non sequiturs, throwing up such gems as, I love you. I don't care if you're a doggo in a trench coat. This one's probably my favorite. You have a lovely face. Can I put it on an air freshener? I want to keep your smell close to me always.
Wow. Actually, that one's got some logic to it.
It's pretty funny, yeah.
The doggo in a trench coat, I don't get.
I don't get that one either, yeah. This one's really weird too. Wait, this beanie hat, is it fashionable? And then
Does this beanie hat make my ass look fat? Is that something like that, yeah.
This one's great. You look like Jesus if he were a butler in a Russian mansion.
All right, sexy Jesus.
Holy fuck. Next up was Curie, a less powerful piece of software that Shane described as the closest to depressing online pickup line lists out of all the GPT-3 variants.
Oh, wait, what's this guy's name?
Curie. Curie's poetic, mysterious, and borderline sleazy wordplay included, your eyes are like two rainbows and a rainbow of eyes. I can't help but stare.
Okay.
I'm like the ice cream. You can keep me in the freezer for a while, but then I melt.
All right.
My name is a complicated combination of 45 degrees of forward motion, 25 degrees of leftward drift, 75 degrees of upward acceleration, and infinity. And that is the point where my love for you stops. That sounds like some fucking, like, just awful written sci-fi.
Yeah, it's like from Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's the android. Yeah. That's the depressed android. He's the one who says things like, the dew has fallen with a particularly sickening thud this morning.
Yeah.
Come here, cat. Come here, my poor baby.
So loud. Hi, buddy. Hi, Vaughn. If you want to see our cat, you can join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/Termion, where you can watch this entire host episode. How about that? I love this one. This next one. Hey, my name is John Smith. Will you sit on my bread box while I cook? Or is there some kind of speed limit on that thing?
Oh, calm down, John Smith.
I know.
Did you say that to Pocahontas?
John Smith, right? The third AI, Babbage, is less sophisticated still. This program's charm offensive ricocheted between being aggressively forthright and awkwardly digressive.
I gotta write that down, awkwardly digressive.
You're looking good today. Want snacks? That sounds like a pickup line I would have. That's me flirting. Hey, you look really nice. Would you like snacks?
How do you feel about snacks? You like food?
It is urgent that you become a professional athlete.
What that translates to? Run!
This one is wild. I actually love this one. I love you. I love you. I love you to the confines of death and disease. The legions of earth rejoices. Woe to be to the world. That one's kind of metal.
That's very metal. Woe be to the world.
Woe be to the world. I love you. I love you. To the confines of death and disease.
Yeah. What do their voices sound like?
And then this one gets really weird. There's Ada, the smallest of the variants, whose chat had less in common with barroom romance than it did the kind of obscure consumer-friendly email headlines you'd expect from an AI-minded bot. Body softening pads. But folks, if you're listening to this and you're like in the dating pool and you're on, and just use one of these.
Try a few of these. See
if it works. 2017 rug boat, two-tone neck tie shirt.
I'm sorry, what?
Don't know. Future Pop-Tarts by Tracy Thorne. That one lost me. Ada, I don't like Ada.
No, Ada does not know what's up at all.
In the interest of making things weirder still, Shane then instructed Da Vinci to craft pickup lines based on story prompts about post-human AIs that were using them to flirt. The machine yielded the following dystopic results. Hey, baby, are your schematics compatible with this protocol?
Oh, wow. I like that one. Yeah. Write that one down, folks. Use it on me.
What's the definition of a femtometer? Because I'd like to run it through your quark 10 times.
Okay.
I can tell by your red power light that you're into me. And then finally, can I see your parts list?
Wow.
Holy fuck.
Why does that one sound so sultry and so confusing at the same time?
Of all the lines spouted by Shane's virtual pickup artist, the one of the most memorable comes from one of the most primitive minds, a neural network she trained for the exact same purpose back in 2017. You look like a thing, and I love you.
Okay. Yeah. Writing that down.
So there you go, folks. If you're looking to change up the way that you're flirting on Tinder or Hinge, just drop one
of those immediately in the middle of an argument. Should also be really effective.
Just in the middle of an argument, go, I love you, I love you, I love you to the confines of death and disease. The legions of Earth rejoice.
Yeah, bring it right back down to Earth.
Fuck, man. So
thanks
funny.
For sharing. I love it. I mean, do you think I guess we don't know, but will be we just amongst and dating AI at some point as humans?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. 100%?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
Okay.
100%. I mean, the movie,
it's only a matter of time. They already have the sex dolls.
Yeah. The movie Her is a great example of this.
Yeah.
You know, if we live long enough, if we don't destroy ourselves, if climate change doesn't wipe us out, or if this whole fertility issue isn't the end of human civilization, and we live long enough, at 100%, yes.
Yeah.
You know,
less conflict, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if an AI... If AI gets to the point where it's impossible to distinguish between real human and not, why not?
Yeah.
You know, that's just, as sci-fi as someone might think that is, and as outlandish as someone might think that is, it is, you are naive to think that is not the direction we are headed. 100%. Hmm.
Well, something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Programmable boyfriends and girlfriends.
Yeah. Is it cheating if you fucked an AI?
Well, now you have to, that's all dependent on your agreement with your partner.
Yeah, right.
Right. You know, is it cheating if I have sex with
A Sibian?
Yeah. Well, I was gonna mention an actual bucket list. What do they call that? What's your list of people? Your hall pass list? People you could have sex with?
Yeah, but those are real life humans that have the ability to form
bonds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So there's an emotional, there's more chance, there's no emotional affair is what you're saying with AI.
Well, I mean, in Blade Runner 2049, Ryan Gosling's AI partner, she very much seemed to have emotional bonds with him.
Okay. So
he was also a fucking robot, but so I don't know. Robot, maybe robots love robots.
As always, it depends on the agreement you have with your partner.
I agree. Yeah. Speaking of sci-fi, this is a great transition. Okay. The last thing I wanted to talk to you about today. So my good friend Jordan told me about this months and months ago, and I was like, fuck, I gotta talk about this on the show. Forgot about it. It came up in conversation again the other day. Are you familiar with what an ovipositor is?
Ovipositor. Nope.
Okay. So the other day, a couple of weeks ago, I was watching Alien. I just over the last like 2 months, I watched Alien, Aliens, the sequel, and then Alien 3. Watched Alien 3 like a couple nights ago. Alien is my number one favorite movie of all time. Aliens, the sequel, not a horror movie, full on action film, but like very intense and sci-fi spooky nonetheless. Alien 3. Anyway, whatever. We don't have to get into that. but in the movie Aliens, the sequel by James Cameron, there is a scene where the queen alien is laying eggs. I'm going to show you that scene right here.
Oh, my God.
Right. So here's the egg being laid out of this goopy, big, like phallic
tube, fleshy tube.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, what's happening? Okay.
See how those eggs are being laid? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, some might watch that and go, that is fucking nasty.
Or that's for anybody who didn't see that, it's like, imagine squeezing a Mentos out of the packaging.
Out of a big phallic alien dick.
Yeah. And you kind of, it's like, just like slimes it out.
So Alien, for people who don't know this, Alien, the art design, the design behind Alien all came from this artist named H.G. Geiger. He is very interesting. His artwork is very, like, very sexual and dark and very spooky. Here, I'm going to...
We've talked about it on the show before.
We've talked about H.G. Geiger.
Yeah.
Here, let's... or H.R. Geiger, sorry.
Right.
You can look at his art here. Like, you see, like, very phallic, right?
Yeah.
Very fucking weird.
The ribs really get me. He uses those like lines of the rib cage.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's all these things like going in orifices. There's a lot of orifices in his artwork. Very like weird, fucked up, sexual, like hypersexual. It's really intense. Oh my God, dude. I love it. It makes me so uncomfortable. Anyway, H.G. Geiger. How do I get this fucking off the screen? Hold on a second here. There we go. He's the kind of mastermind behind the design of Alien. And so like I was saying, someone might watch that scene and go, ugh, that is nasty. But there's a lot of people that watch a scene like that and they're like, ooh, that's fucking hot. And this is where the ovipositor comes in. So the ovipositor is basically a big dildo that lays goopy egg molds from gelatin, like egg molded out of gelatin. So it's this big dildo that lays gelatin eggs into the body cavity of your choice.
Oh.
And fans of an ovipositor say that the sensation of mushy extraterrestrial ovium slopping back out of them is a real treat.
Wow. So
here's a photo of
an
ovipositor. Yeah.
Whoa.
So it's like this big alien cock, and then those eggs are made of gelatin and they're frozen, and then they get stuck in this thing, and then you or your partner lays these eggs in you.
Oh my God. Whoa.
So the idea is to replicate the act of being impregnated with eggs, usually from an alien or an insect. And if you've seen the Alien movies, you get the picture, right? Mm-hmm. Many people find this sort of thing very arousing. The toys are simply phallic-shaped hollow tubes that can be used to insert gelatin eggs into oneself There's a funnel-shaped hole in the bottom to receive the eggs, which are inserted one by one, forcing them up the tube and out of the top. So our friend Zoe Ligon, she did a review of ovipositor from this company that sort is like sort of the company that makes them. They're called Primal Hardware. I highly suggest you go look at the website if you're listening. Go to primalhardware.com or whatever. Just Google Primal Hardware. Not safe for work, but if you go there, check out the shit that they're selling, because it is wild. But I want to know, what are your thoughts on that? Is that something that, like, you know, you're pretty open minded? Mm-hmm. If let's just say Todd was like one day was like, hey, I just watched Alien and I really want to like lay some eggs up in you, and I bought an ovipositor. Would you be like, ah? How would you react?
It's definitely not a hard no.
No.
No, I mean, I think gelatin is probably pretty good. I don't know about inserting it into places, but gelatin is like it's in my diet. I eat it. So I'm comfortable with it being inside my body.
Right.
I like the sensation of having something inside me like that, whether it's like a butt plug or a toy or,
do you think you'd rather have an egg laid up your ass or into your hoo-ha?
I probably in my vagina, I would say, or probably in my vagina. I don't know about the butt thing. I think that could just feel really confusing on its way out.
Taking a shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it might feel cool if it's as it's melting.
Well, I don't think this thing, it's gelatin. It's not going to melt.
Right. But it is frozen. So it's going to turn into liquid at some point, right?
I don't think so. No, I don't think. I think you put it in the freezer to like solidify it faster.
Okay. And then you put it in your butt. I could be wrong
about the like, I could, maybe you don't actually have it frozen when you, I think the freezer thing is just to speed up the process of like solidifying the gelatin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've put frozen like yogurt, not from a tub, but like my own plain, no sugar, frozen yogurt up there. And that feels pretty good.
Yeah. I feel like if I met someone, didn't know them, and we were like on a first date or something, or, you know, we were like early in, and they were like, by the way, this is my thing, and I want you to do this to me.
Yeah. I'd be like, I don't know you well enough to lay eggs inside of you yet.
Oh, I think I'd be stoked. I would be like, oh, this is so
beyond
bonkers to me, and yes, I like, if you want me to do this, I am game.
I'm into the veiny phallic sex toy part of it, to be honest with you. Like,
yeah,
I see that. I'm like, all right, yeah, it's very damp looking in this image that you're showing me.
Primal Hardware. They also make a lot of like they make a lot of like tentacles too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, can't spell hardware. Good job, Jer. let's see here. Yeah, wearables, dildos.
Well, this isn't how you spell hardware. So hardware is spelled exactly. HARDWERE if you're looking for it, like werewolf hardware.
Whoa, dude, look at this one. Whoa, dude.
Wait, I'm not on the screen. Are you showing me something?
Yeah, you're not looking at this? This is
Whoa.
It's called the petunia. Oh, dude. Whoa. Holy fucking shit.
They really do look a lot like H.G. Geiger's work.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of this does. Even the... Oh, my God.
Wow. Just like long alien dick. Hmm.
That's really
giant tongues. Whoa, the tongue tickle. Wow. I love that they use a beer bottle as like, here's for scale. Yeah, pretty interesting shit. Primal Hardware, primalhardware.com, HARDWERE. So I did fucking spell it right the first time. Thank God.
Yeah, you're a smart man.
I'll leave that to interpretation. Wow. Well, look at this fucking Look at this wearable. Wow.
I want to go to that convention. I want to go to the sci-fi sex convention.
Yeah.
And just look at the costumes. Because, you know, if that's what the genitalia of the sci-fi sex world look like, I want to know what the rest, what's going on with the hands, what's going on with the mouth and the tongue. I want to see all of the, I want to see all the costumes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever floats your boat. Super, super stoked that there's people out there that love that shit. I'm not into it, but I get it. Like I'm into it, not sexually. I'm into it. You know, I mean, fuck, everything I love is sci-fi horror. I can't get enough of it. Like I will watch the shittiest horror film just for the love of horror. And if it's sci-fi, you know, anything Lovecraftian, anything like that, I fucking love it. But I don't, it's never been a turn on for me sexually.
Mm-hmm.
But fuck, it would be cool.
Yeah, but it's obviously like integrated pretty deeply into your personality. You know, right. Like you're pretty consistent with that, with your, even in your art and your, even in the books you like to read, like, you like to exist in that sort of sci-fi or dystopian, like horror or thriller, like hard hero. Like, I don't know. It's totally not my genre. It's completely, probably the opposite. I know that for many years I was like, no, I don't want to watch an action movie. And then it turns out that I really love action movies, and I always really enjoy action movies. Yeah. Like there's a kind of fantasy to them that I can totally get behind. But still, it's never my first pick. And I feel kind of the same way with sci-fi. Like I am almost like, I'll refuse to watch any of those movies that came out like a couple of years ago where it's just like one person floating around in space in an emergency, whatever that movie was. I was like, I'm not going to go watch Moon. I'm pretty sure I fell asleep in the...
Moon is so good. It's Sam Rockwell. It's twins of Sam. It's Sam Rockwell times two. There's nothing... He's the best.
Yeah, he is pretty great, but I still slept through that, through most of that movie.
Moon's so good. That's my just the tips this week. Go watch Moon if you haven't watched it. It's fucking amazing. I kind of gave it a little bit of a spoiler there, but spoiler alert. All right, let's wrap this up. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Oh, you got something?
I do. I just want to say, I just want to acknowledge that that we had some really good friends, people. Hear our plea for support on Patreon, and many of you stepped up, and we're just so grateful. And so I have a handful of folks to say thank you to.
Vonnegut is also in the back there saying thank you.
Vonnegut's the most most important thank you that I have to make. So we had a couple of folks not only just like sign on, but like up their tier. And I don't have that list of names in front of me. I just have new patrons. So those of you who are existing patrons who did up your tier, I'm going to name you at a later time, but thank you so much. We see you and we appreciate you. And then a very special thanks, to Hannah, to Monique, to CAB, to Hannah, Ashley, I want to say Eli, but it could be Ellie. And thank you to Anna, Jessica, Rebecca, Christina, Jean, Marie, and Charlotte. You are the true humans of the hour here on Turn Me On Podcast.
Thank you so much for your support. And if you would like to support the podcast, you can do that at patreon.com/turnmeon. Whatever tier you sign up for, we appreciate it. And if you're not in the position where you can do that, that's okay. We still love you. But what you could do is, you know, just smash the fuck out of the like button or the follow button or the whatever the button is, the subscribe button, wherever you're listening to this shit, whatever the button is, just click the shit out of that. And leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts if you have the time, because we love seeing those. And they're all really, really nice. Mostly.
And the other thing you can do is tell your friends and anyone who, you know, they post on Facebook and they're like, going on, well, maybe not these days, going on a long drive, looking for some new podcasts. Just like take the split second to tag Turn Me On Podcast and spread the word, because we just love gathering with you in this way.
Folks, thank you again. That is it for this week. Until next week.
Go touch yourself.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.